Good morning. I'm Madonna Guy, and you're watching The Natural Alternative. I'm honored to welcome Faisy Greaves today, a transformational life coach. Welcome, Faisy.
Thank you, Madonna. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast.
Absolutely welcome. Now, I always find that people in your line of work or anything to do with healing and helping human beings on the planet have got their own story that started their journey. So what was your story?
Well, I've got lots of little stories, but my main story was some 7 years ago when I was gently forced out of the workforce. I just turned 63, and it absolutely destroyed my life. In a way, it destroyed who I was, and I became very, very lost. I was so young. I've worked all my life from when I was 19, so it really threw me, and I lost my own identity, and I went into a little bit of a downward spiral of in my life, and I came across a beautiful gentleman who was doing the transformational life coaching, and had a really good chat with him, and he encouraged me to do the program. He did a lot of work. I did a lot of one-on-one work with him to get rid of all those limiting beliefs and lots of parental programming, because my background is from a Lebanese background. So we were brought up as women that we didn't have a voice. We were to serve our families, our workmates, and our people and everybody around us. So we weren't encouraged to be that strong person we can be.
Isn't that funny? You know, there's all this bandying around with the whole crazy trying to disarm women at the moment, you know, taking away that energy of being a woman, being a mother, being that caregiver within the family, and almost minimizing it by our politicians. And here you are, the feminine aspect of owning that Lebanese background was all, it sounded for a second, quite the negative aspect of being a woman, as opposed to the real empowerment of being a woman, which obviously you've owned now.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Now, in spite of my father himself being he was very protective over us women, because there was four of us. I come from a family of seven.
Yes.
There was eight of us, but just seven children right now. So it was four girls and three boys. And in our culture, the boys were to be educated because they are meant to be the provider. So they educate them so that they can go and work and get a good job and provide for their family. And we women were supposed to be the nurturers, and we keep the family together. So we weren't educated like our brothers were. But in saying that, I have achieved so much. And Dad was a believer in encouraging us to do the best we can, but his culture was the part that was holding him back.
Yeah.
So when he brought us to Australia some 50 odd years ago, he said to me, "Faisy, you are now in a safe country and you can achieve anything you want in your life." And
that did you believe him at the time?
Sorry?
Did you believe him at the time?
You know, I did, because when I was 12 years old, I wanted to be an entrepreneur at 12 years old.
Wow.
And my dad had bakeries, and he used to, we used to get the flour and the sugar in big, like 50 kilo bags, and they were all made out of Hessian material. And the natives in Africa, I was born in Ghana, although I'm from a Lebanese background. The natives in the country, they used to come and take these Hessian bags, and they used to make their kaftan outfits from. And Dad used to they used to throw them in one place, and this guy used to come and pick them up. One day I said to Dad, why are they just taking them? Why aren't we selling it to them? And he goes, well, I'm not going to do anything with them. You want to do something, you do it. And I was 12. I'll never forget that. So I'd come home from school and I'd put them into sizes. And then I sold them like, you know, a dollar for 10 or something like that. But I did all that. He said, you want to do whatever. Do you know, within a very short time, I actually saved 1,000 in the currency there was called CDs. It was like a dollar. So $1,000 in a very short period of time. And then it was a lot of black marketing stuff in those days. And Dad desperately needed cash for a transaction for the bakery that he needed to get some more raw material. And he actually came and asked me for the money. But he was so cheeky. See, to me, it wasn't just making the money. To me, it was just achieving.
Yes.
I was achieving something. I was being productive. I didn't see the waste of the Hessian bags going. It was just a whole combination. And at that age, I had no idea what, you know, life was all about. But he told me many years ago when we came to Australia, he said to me, do you know when I took that $1,000 from you, you know, you helped me so much. I actually gave, he gave me a check. He said, I actually gave you a deposit slip. That's how much I knew about, you know, value of money. But it was really funny. But yeah, I had a really great relationship with Dad. He was an entrepreneur himself. He was an orphan and he built himself a business. And he had actually three bakeries before we left Ghana.
Yeah.
But he lost a lot when we had to come to Australia, but his focus was to bring us to a safe country. So
yeah,
very lucky and very blessed that he made that effort to bring us.
And his entire aim was to keep you all safe. What an awesome human being. That's what we need in the men in our worlds.
And he was a very rare man, because in our culture, again, when you turn, you know, 18, they wanted to marry you off and they had arranged marriages. He never believed in that. Although his marriage was arranged, because when he started to make money, he was introduced to my mum, and she was also an orphan, and he could see she was badly abused as an orphan. And so he kind of married her to save her, but he was a loving man. And both of them, they brought us up with just love. That's all I remember as a young person, with love. But that's lots of stories behind there. But
yeah,
it was good.
So when you were gently moved out of your role at 63 years old, what was missing in your life at that time that allowed you to go down into such a downward spiral? Because obviously if we lose a job or get shifted from a job and we've got 20 other things in our world, quite often it doesn't create such a hole in our life.
For me at that time, because I've been a single mom for many, many, many years, for 25 years, all I did and all I wanted to do was to work and put a roof over my son's head. And I did that, and I did that successfully. And all I knew was to work. So when I was shifted out of work, although I had another small business that I was running, it's the way they did it. They accused me, and it really upset me, because I felt I lost my self-worth. And what they had accused me of was not me at all. I did not do what they accused me of, and I couldn't prove it, because I didn't have the money to do that. And it was like accept and walk away, leave it behind. But it still bothered me. It was like a belief and self-worth and identity. I lost who I was.
Yeah.
I lost that beautiful soul I had within me. It got crushed.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I went spiral. I was like, what do I do now? What do I do? Where do I go? How do I move on? And that was what I needed a little bit of coaching with.
And imagine if you hadn't asked those questions. Sometimes people don't even get to the point where they're asking those questions. How do I move on? How do I move forward?
Yes. Yes. A lot of us, and I see it now in the age group that some of the ladies of some people I work with, even some men as well, especially with people losing their jobs and lots of changes has happened in our world in the last few years.
Yeah.
People sort of started to get a little bit misplaced. And instead of what I do, I've actually written down here. What I feel that really, really helped me, and it's really important for us to be aware of, is that we need to embrace change.
Yeah.
Because we keep evolving. If we are evolving like a caterpillar, we're evolving all the time. But if we choose to stay in the cocoon of what's happening around us and blame things are happening to me, they're not happening to you, they're happening for you. But it's how we embrace that and how we move forward with that. And I've always, maybe because of what we've done and where we've come from, and, you know, I probably should write a story about our life, sort of like how we, you know, I've never even been in an aeroplane till I turned 19 to come to Australia. And it was horrendous. And we had, in those days, we had to travel 3 days and change 3 flights before we can get to Australia. There was no direct traveling.
Yeah.
And my dad got sick on the way, and it was traumatic. So if we don't embrace change, we stay where we are, we will never grow. And I think growing is really, look at the child. You look at a child when they take their first steps and how exciting it is when they say their first word, how we encourage them. If they don't keep moving, and if they don't keep falling and getting up again and falling and getting up again, they will not grow to be the beautiful people they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really embracing change.
And are there some particular limiting beliefs and sabotages that might be there that are stopping people from embracing change?
Yeah. It's because we've, in what happens to us is that we get, it's like a program. Our mind is like a computer. So you take the mind and it's like a computer. So we put information into this computer. So, you know, people who program the computers can understand that as well. I don't understand it a lot, but they put information to the computer. So the information comes in, it comes to our conscious mind. But beliefs, triggers, programming, we take that in, but then we can't store it all in our conscious mind. It slips down to our subconscious mind. So if you look at an iceberg, our conscious mind is the part that's above the water. And then it goes to your subconscious mind. And as the subconscious mind gets overloaded, it drops down to your unconscious mind. So we do things unconsciously. We drive a car unconsciously. Once we've learned how to drive, we're driving the car. We don't stop and think, I've got to put it to the first gear, or I've got to stop and put it in park or whatever. Because we do that unconsciously. And a lot of our lives we live is unconscious. But there's 60, 70,000 thoughts that comes through our mind. The conscious mind cannot keep all that. So it puts it into your subconscious there. So that's your computer storage. What happens is a situation occurs in your physical life and it triggers that little thought in your unconscious mind, and the mind brings it all back out. And we can't automatically go alt-delete. Because it doesn't work. We need to work within our brain and we need to bring that right up. And the process I do, it's called Evolve Now Matrix Therapy. The program I work with, or I've been trained on, is we work with the individuals. So what I do is I guide the individual, my clients, into bringing these memories from, and these can be memories from birth. It could be before birth. Bring them out gently, and then we clear, because when we bring it out in their unconscious mind, from their unconscious mind, then we give them positive resources. They actually bring it up. So, you know, ask the client, and what does your three-year-old want? I want to be free. I want to run around. I want to play. I don't want to stop here. These are the kind of things that we work with. So when we give them the resources of their positive resources, what that child needed at 3 years old. I was working with a lady, and she doesn't like noises and confined spaces. She feels really, and she all she wants to do is to run away. And she couldn't fare, because she'd get into a job, and then all of a sudden, if things don't go her way, she just wants to run away. So when I was doing the work with her, she was premature. She was 8 weeks premature, and she had to be delivered emergency Caesar because she was in danger. And she kept saying, "I don't want to get out." She wasn't ready to, yeah. Look, I'm getting goosebumps. She was not ready to come out to this world yet. So she was forced into this world.
Yeah.
And she didn't like it. So that was being born at 7 months old. And she said, I can see people with hats. So it's nurses. She was seeing the doctors and the nurses in the theater room bringing her out to this world.
Amazing.
It's amazing. Another one couldn't understand why he didn't like people shouting. And when people start to shout, he would actually totally withdraw and go into himself, not knowing. And he's 40-something now. We did the clearing, went back to when he was in the womb, and his mom got pregnant with him. They weren't married. Dad wanted to get rid of him because they didn't have the money, and mom wouldn't let that happen. So the argument was always about money.
Right.
Right. And that they didn't want him to come because they didn't know how they were going to survive. But they had him, and so now he didn't like feeling the shouting happening. And the other thing he was always afraid of, losing his money.
Right.
And that was from the womb.
Yes.
So the programming our mind picks up, and the limiting beliefs that happens in our lives, it really, really patterns us into who we are. So if we can move and bring these out, bring these programs out and clear them, work with them. And then, so now when he thinks of money, he thinks of it differently. He knows he's not going to lose the money. He knows he can make money.
Yes.
And because he knew where it came from.
Yeah.
We recognize where it comes from. My dad used to, I had a limiting beliefs on being wealthy, you know, having money. And again, because my father, I remember when we were little, he was really hard done by with lots of businessmen in the country at that time. He used to say to us, rich people are bad, because everyone who he dealt with that had money, because he wasn't like that, did the dirty on him. One particular man actually put a little diamond in Dad's house. And in those days in Africa, that was a no-no. And he dobbed Dad in, put it under his television, behind the TV screen.
Mm.
And the police came and went straight to where that diamond was. How did they know?
Yes, of course they did.
And why would he put the diamond that he knows he shouldn't have behind it? Anyway, so little things like that. So Dad always, rich people are mean people.
Yeah.
They become rich on hurting other people. So it was a limiting belief for me. So every time I'd come to make money, I'd sabotage myself because subconsciously I didn't want to be rich. I'm still working on it. It's work in progress.
Yeah.
But I'd stop myself.
You didn't want to be the sort of person your dad didn't respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And money is such, it's one of those huge topics, isn't it, with coaching, because it's just about it can be behind so many things.
Yeah. So, you know, you hear people, okay, what's limiting beliefs or what's programming is, you know, you hear people say nothing's going to come out of you. I was working with a young girl and her teacher told her nothing because she was beautiful, and that says, all you're going to do is use your body. Guess what?
Yeah.
She was abused many times.
Poor darling. Yeah, there's a couple of girls I know, both very, very large girls, both about 30 years old. And funnily enough, both their mothers, when they were 12 or 13, said to them something along the lines of, why are you bothering to look pretty? No one's ever going to want a girl like you.
Exactly.
Like two girls, two mothers, similar things, both have massive issues with their weight, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing. And we know it's there. We know it's happening now. What beautiful thing of it now is that we are more and more conscious.
Yes.
Of our minds. We're more conscious. You hear people say mindsets and mind changes, and that's very true. But to change your mind, if someone keeps saying to you, oh, just change your mind, you may be able to do that, but you've got to really work in the unconscious mind.
Totally agree. Exactly.
Because it'll still keep coming back at you. One lady I worked with, she's from Melbourne, and she had a beautiful relationship with their first husband, and he was a soulmate, but he died. He died in a plane accident. She told him, she was very, she's very intuitive. She told him, I don't want you to go in that plane today. I don't want you to go in that plane. He says, I have to, it's for work. She says, take me with you. And he said, no, you can't come because it's work today. He used to go to different farms and check on the cattle and things like that. And he did, and he died. It was crashed and he died. She was only 19 then. It absolutely just destroyed her life. She went to a second relationship 5-6 years after, married this man, almost killed her, killed her child in her. Eventually, she left him. 10 years down the track, she got involved with another man, and he was exactly the same, abusive and that. So when I did the work with her, what came out was she was actually mentally sabotaging herself.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to be here. She wanted to be with her first husband.
Yeah.
And we did the work, and I made, because the way we work is you talk to the person that's been affecting you most. She talked to the person that, you know, she so loved, and he gave her a message subconsciously. Stop hurting yourself. Please move on with your life.
Aww. Yeah.
I know. And from then on, she is so strong. She's left. That actually, she's even had a third guy. She's left the third guy. She's now says, you know what? This is all about me now, no one else. She had to learn to love herself.
Yes.
To value herself, and to find her own self-worth and her identity, because she was hiding behind these men that were so abusive to her.
Yeah. And it's quite an addiction then, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, so it doesn't matter whether emotions are good or bad. If you get a dopamine hit, whether it's from being abused or hit or attacked, then you are still get, you know, there's some level of addiction to that abuse when we keep going back for more.
Yes.
Which seems counterintuitive, but sometimes the unconscious brain or the subconscious brain is enjoying the drama or the connection or something in that relationship.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you look at when people are abusive, both men or women. Unfortunately, it seems like men more abusing the ladies. I guess because women are come across as being more vulnerable, and women are more nurturing and things like that, so they end up being abused more. I've seen. I'm working with a man who was mentally abused by his wife for years, and so with the abuse, what happens is they get used to it. It becomes like a pattern for them.
Yes.
And so the abuser, the perpetrator, becomes more and more empowered. But it becomes like a cycle. We call it the drama triangle.
Yeah.
So one minute they're the perpetrator. When they feel that they've gone too far, they come back and they start to rescue the person that they've just been abusive to. And then when the rescuing settles and they get into their own, you know, oh, I've got this person back, then they become the victim. Like, you know, you made me, you made me get angry. Look what you made me do. These kind of words.
Yes.
And then they become the victim. Then when they become the victim, the partner starts to want to rescue them. And then they become that perpetrator again.
Wow.
And it's a cycle. It's a drama triangle in both their lives, in both the relationships.
Yes.
And abusers particularly who really, you know, if you go into their history, either their parents were abusers or their grandparents were abusers or great-grandparents were abusers or they've been abused themselves.
Yes. So because of your training, you would have heard of the ACEs study, I assume, the adverse childhood events study that was done over decades. It was actually not so much the emotional thing, but there was a list of 10 questions and they were all about safety in the home, you know, so how safe someone feels in the home, and then how that it changes the DNA of our bodies so that we're more likely to develop things like heart disease or diabetes or obesity or cancer and all sorts of things. So because the immune system is like, well, if I'm not safe in my body, then why would I bother looking after myself? The immune system follows suit. So if our brain's feeling sad or depressed or lonely or upset, then the immune system just sort of goes, well, I'm taking a holiday.
Exactly. You are so right there, Madonna, because I'll talk a little bit about me. I was married to a narcissistic man, and he was a very, very, very jealous man. And when I met him, I was quite slim. I'm a lot heavier now than I ever was. I was quite slim, but I love myself. No, I love who I am.
Yes.
I love who I am. So I've always been one of those people who acknowledges people. I've always been a person who would be the first person to smile to someone. It's just my nature. And I used to do that when I first married him. Unbeknown to me that he was a jealous, controlling, narcissistic man.
So was he when you met, do you think? Or do you think he did the whole schmoozing thing first?
Yes, he did that. Definitely did that.
Yeah.
He wooed me and I loved his kind of music because I love music and dancing and yeah, he showed a different part. But once we got married, it was like I became his property. And I don't like anybody owning me. but in saying that, I thought this person can change that person so they can see the real me, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
So to protect myself, guess what I did?
Uh-huh. Put on some weight.
I went and put on some weight. And did I put on some weight? So that, because before that, anytime we'd go out, why are you talking to that person, be it man or woman? He didn't like it. He didn't want anyone to like me except him. So he wanted me to be in that cocoon. And I was in it for 18 years because my son came along and I wanted my son to have a father and all that. Until one day I thought when he was giving me all these conditions, I thought, no, I don't think I can do this. And I did not want my son to become like him.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't want him to be programmed like that. So I must have had that intuition in me for learning what I do now, like what I'm working with now, that being a coach, all the time in the back of my mind, because I always believe we are individuals. We should be loved. We should live the best life ever.
And you had that role model of your father who was caring, nurturing, protective, you know, and supportive in the background. So I can imagine even regardless if your hubby wasn't a narcissist, then you're still going to, you know, this is what we do. We compare people with that, you know, that's what dads are for, isn't it?
Yes, that's
right. You be a role model and hopefully some of them actually do a good job.
That's right. Yeah. So it's look.
And just curiously then, because sometimes when weight is put on because of emotional gear, it can be really tough to shift. So because you have to release the emotions in tandem with releasing the fat.
That's right.
So how have you gone with that over the years? Has anything ever really worked for you, or has it just been one of those things that you've gone, not my wheelhouse, I'm happy the way I am?
No, you know, and I'll be honest with you, for only up until about, probably about 2 years, up until I became licensed and I started to practice my coaching, I still was happy to be overweight.
Yes.
Because guess what? I was using that as a protection for myself.
Yeah.
So nobody would love me again.
Ah, darling. Yeah. Right?
Because
it's a good protective mechanism, isn't it?
It is. It's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. Now I'm much older and I'm really not looking for anyone. But now I love who I am. And I am working on my weight now, and it feels a lot much easier to work with it now.
Yeah.
But in the past, I'd lose a bit of weight, and then I'll self-sabotage. I'd look at myself and I'd go, "Oh, you're looking good." No, I can't. You know, I can't be good. I can't be, because I don't want anyone to look at me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was drilled in there.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a protection.
And if you've got 70,000 subconscious thoughts going through your brain, going, no, life isn't safe. Life isn't safe. Don't love me. Don't love me.
That's right.
I'm not worthy. Yeah.
No, I can't deal with another problem.
Yes. I've got this many in the air. Don't throw me one more. That's right.
Yeah.
So when you're working with people, especially people with really complicated, you know, because some people, it's not just one thing either. Some people not only have had narcissistic parents or abuse in relationships or you know, and abusive relationships and traumas at work. You know, like, where do you start? Is it where the person wants to start, or do you go back to the earlier? How do you work that? When someone's got a whole bunch of complications, because I think, once again, the last 2.5 years has shown us that we need to be able to support every human being on the planet. Everyone needs support these days. We need to see it. We need to feel it. We need to reach out.
Exactly. And it hurts me when I hear particularly young ones, they go, oh, I've got it under control. Every weekend I drink away my life, and Monday I deal with life. That really hurts me when I hear that. They think they've got their life under control, but they really don't. They need that support. And hiding behind that image of I've got it all under control, they really don't. You could hear, I could see it on in their Facebook messages. So the way we work, or the way I work, or the program I work with is, when I first meet a client, or if someone comes to me and says, look, I need help. I do a complimentary discovery. I call it discovery, getting to know you, whichever word we want to use. So I get to chat with you, and I take notes, and sometimes I will work with that person until I get the gist of exactly what's happened in their lives. And then if they feel they're comfortable with me, because it's got to go both ways, and I feel that I can work with them, then I offer them the program. The program, one-off, I don't like to do. If someone says, oh, I just want a session today, that's not going to help them.
Yes.
Because when we do the first one session, did I lose you again?
No, I've got you.
I did, I've lost you again. Just say something.
Hello. Hello.
Okay, that's better. I must have touched something again. So when the one-off is not helpful for any of them.
Yes.
Because when you do the first session, we generally suggest we do the parent clearing first. So we and then again, the subconscious mind of the client will tell me whether they want the mother or the father. So, and we really insist on the first two sessions to be their parents, because 99% of our programming is from our parental program.
Yes.
And then the following sessions, we go, who is the next person that's been a big influence in your life that has destroyed some parts of you or has meant something for you? Yeah. And then they tell me again, when I do the session, it's just a matter of closing. And a reason we close our eyes is so that we don't have that busy brain. Because when you close your eyes, you can't see the bird flying. You can't see this person walking, whatever it is. Yes. So it's just to stop the busy brain, because that's where we want to work with. We want to work with the person's mind. Quite often it would be a partner, a husband, a fellow I'm working with from India at the moment. He's really has issues with his family members. He's got a really narcissistic strong auntie and a narcissistic strong uncle from two different parts of their lives. So then they tell you, they say, okay, who do you want to talk with? Who do you want to work with today? And then we do that. After about third, fourth session, we work on then going to their limiting beliefs. And then we do individual. So it could be anger. I want to get rid of, why do I get angry? Why does this trigger me? Then I get angry and then can't cope.
Yes.
Or why do I feel guilty every time I pick a glass of water? I feel I'm going to put on weight. Or why when my friend says to me something, it affects me.
Yes.
So it's, and so these are the limiting beliefs. So we work on them. And nice. There's a lot of them. I mean, you know, the five things of like guilt and fear and hurt and anger. So we work on all those, because once, and what happens is when you do a clearing on, say, anger, because we go through you, okay, how old were you when you first experienced anger? Could be a 3-year-old, could be a 10-year-old. We try to go from 0 to 7, and then we go 7 to 14, because these are the changes in our lives. Subconsciously, our mind works from 0 to 7 is our biggest influence in our lives. And then 7 to 14 is our teenage, right? When we go into becoming up. We're getting out of childhood to the next stage. And then from 14 to 21 is when we are teenagers and we're experiencing life. So we go through those stages, and every age, whatever age person comes up with, we work on that. And then we go back and we give them resources to clear all that. So then something would trigger them off for anger. But when we do the work on the anger, you will find it's called a link pinch. I can't never say that word. It's like having, imagine there's a string and there's a knot in a string every 6 inches, right?
Yes.
But when we clear this particular knot, you will find it relates to all the other knots.
Yes, absolutely.
So then,
and that makes sense.
Yeah, does that mean? Yeah. So that's how we work. So normally, I like to work with about. We always suggest 6 to 10 sessions.
Yes.
6 if you like. I'm working with a lady who had anorexia, the one that was abused, anorexia and alcoholism. She went into. She needed about 18 sessions.
Yeah,
because she had a lot happening for her. Yeah. So much abuse in her life.
Yes. Yeah. And I think of, you know, because I do a process in kinesiology called survival patterns. So, and it's funny because as you're talking, my brain can't help but to be working out where in the brain these things are happening.
Yes.
Because there's a part of the brain called the periventricular survival system, which I love. And they've done genetics, especially with that ACEs study. So they looked at the subglossal gyrus, the anterior cingulate gyrus, and the orbitofrontal cortex. Not that that matters, but these three little areas, they know that there's up to 7 generations of how we cope with stress in there. So those can be part of the hard wiring in your brain, you know, so the hard drive in your brain as opposed to the software. Yeah. So those things, and to unravel that when it's generational, as you would know, that takes a bit longer. And one of my clients had lost a couple of kids. She was abused by a narcissistic mother. There was all men in her family, none of them who treated her well. And I remember it took us 4 years, monthly treatments. And, you know, it was sort of a bit of a joke with us. Okay, what do you want to work on today? And she'd always say, well, let's clear some survival stuff and, you know, see what goes. And after about 4 years, I remember one day, survival stuff didn't show up with kinesiology. And she said, oh, and I went, oh. She said, what do we do now? And I said, I don't know. We'd never actually thought about getting to the end of it. Anyway, it was sort of funny. But, yeah, generally it definitely does
not. Yeah, look, if people keep coming back for maintenance, I think it's very important. Yes. I still have a coach. I've still got my coach who coaches me, because every now and then I go, how do I deal with this, you know, and things happen. So, you know, you'll do a clearing on something, but your subconscious mind will bring something that you didn't even think, and even the client goes, oh, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
Because something came up. So I write it down, and then when we finish, we talk about it. Would you like to work on that one next time? And that's how we do it. So
yeah,
it's work in progress.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want a lovely, happy life. And look, don't take me wrong. I'm not saying that I walk around. No, I do. I actually am the happiest I've ever been. Seriously, the happiest I've ever been in my life. If I was, you know, it sounds awful, but if I was to pass tomorrow, I've said to my family, I just want you to celebrate my good life because I am in my happiest place now. And it's because I'm doing something I love.
Yeah.
I've worked out, I've found who I am, identified who the person I am, and I love the person I am.
Yes.
And that's where I work with my clients. So the first person you must fall in love with is yourself. When you fall in love with yourself, everybody else is going to love you because it comes out of your pores.
Yeah.
It comes out of your energy. It comes out of your persona. As you walk around, people are going to say, whoa, I want that person, what that person's got.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, Madonna. I'm sure you see it all the time. You know, it's very sad when you see people. It's like they're walking around and not have a purpose in their lives.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things the last couple of years that has been driven home as well. You know, and I'm not talking about the positive messages. You know, people have been wanting to spend more time with family and work out what they want in their life. I think that has been a lot going on. But on the other hand, we've got these poor little germaphobes on the planet who are terrified to hug and touch and connect with people anymore. And they think Zoom is the safe thing to do. Not that, you know, I'm not saying, you know, but I'm just sort of, there's been so much fear the last 2.5 years. It's driven people into this crazy unconscious survival patterning. I think it's going to take decades to get out of some of the dangerous
things
we've taken people.
Yeah. You know, when this pandemic first happened, because I'm a people's person, I just absolutely love being around people. And when it first happened and all my friends, because I used to go out to dinners with 3 or 4 different groups of friends, and all of them was like, what are we going to do? We can't go out to dinner. The places are closed. And I went, like, I'm not technically minded at all. I still find technology very challenging. And I said to them, look, stop it now. Cut that out. We need to do something. I said, how about we have dinners on Zoom? And they go, what are you talking about? I said, okay, I'll set the Zoom up. Luckily, I learned how to book a Zoom. So I set the Zoom up and I send them the link and I said, all you have to do is press that link. But at 6 o'clock, I want you to make yourself your dinner. Or you either take away, I don't care, but make yourself your dinner and a glass of wine. Sit in front of your laptop or your computer with your meal and we'll all connect at 6 o'clock. And they found it so amazing. So I was still doing the connection because at that time, physically, we couldn't. But it made them, they all wanted every week now. We used to meet once a month. Every week. And this one will hold her plate and say, this is what I've got tonight. And that one hold her glass of wine and connect that way. So there is always a solution. There's, you know, even when we are ill, there is always a solution.
Yes. But
we can make ourselves more sick if we let it happen to us.
Yes. I remember years ago I was reading a novel and they said that there was a yogic mantra. What is the solution for this? Because as soon as you ask that question, you're open to a solution.
Yes.
When our brain does the opposite and goes, oh, man, this is stuff. Nothing's ever going to get better again. Of course it's not.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So true. So true.
And the brain doesn't know the difference between what's real and imaginary. So if we're giving ourselves 70,000 negative thoughts a day, of course the brain's going to believe it.
Yes, yes. So true. And I was watching a documentary the other week and it was really interesting because it was about the brain as well, which is really interesting. They did a survey on young ones and I think the kids were from about the age of 7 to 14 in classroom. So they gave them an exercise, says, get a piece of paper and on one side write negative and then the other side write positive. And want you to, in any order you want, doesn't matter. You can do your negative and positive, whatever. But just write the negative thoughts or negative things that happened to you on the side and then the positive on that side. And they gave them a short period of time to sit there quietly and write it. And they were all did it. Okay, what did you find? How many of you found it easy to write the negative, more negatives than positive? They all put their hands up. How many had lots of positives? Not many of them put their hands up. So they all remembered and they all focused on the negatives.
Yeah.
So they said to them, all right, now I want the next part of this exercise is every day I want you to write three things you're grateful for. And I want you to have a jar at home and put that in the jar. You could do it all at once or you can through the day, just three things that you're grateful for today. And they wanted them to have a jar in the classroom. So as the kids walked in, they went and put their three positives in the jar. And the energy and the attitude and the mental being of those kids, massive change. It was fascinating to sort of see. And even the kids themselves were happier within themselves.
Yeah, they've done actual studies. I'm sure you know this, but there was one that was a 30-day gratitude study and they basically got, and I can't remember whether it was one or five or something a day, but it wasn't a lot. And at the end of 30 days, they measured their happiness score compared to at the beginning and it was higher. And that continued for 6 months.
Yes.
So, and you can imagine goosebumps. So because it takes 21 days to change a habit, by thinking grateful, because you don't want to write the same thing every day because that's boring. So it opens up that frontal cortex to be looking for more things to be grateful for. Yes. Yeah. And another little slant on it, I did an interview with a psychologist, Trish Nash, and she said that one of the things that she does when she's thinking about her gratitude, she also tries to focus on something that was a challenge and grateful for the challenge because of what she learned from it. So she does that within her gratitude practice as well, which I thought was a nice twist on it.
Yeah. And, you know, everything that happens to us it is a learning, you know, and it sounds awful. Like even when people get sick, when someone gets a heart attack or a warning and they don't take notice of it, and then they get the second one, they don't take notice of it. I believe that the first notice we take of our health is really, really important.
Yeah.
Because that means that our body is telling us something is not right within us.
Yes.
So either change your eating habits, change your mental being, change, you know, the way you do things.
Yeah.
It, whatever it is, follow it up. It's no point saying, oh, I'm sick.
That's right.
Follow it up. What is causing me to be sick?
Yes.
What did I eat? What did I do? What was I thinking? Do I always think that way?
Yes.
And if we practice that, I believe we'll have a lot more healthier people in
absolutely
this world.
Because people almost like being in denial. They don't want to know that. And people know subconscious, you know, people know that they're eating crap or drinking wrong or, you know, people are aware. It's never a surprise when I say, well, how much coffee you drink, 7 a day? Go, maybe you should cut it down. It might help your blood pressure. Maybe increase some water. You know, let's get some magnesium and CoQ10 in there, you know. And it's sort of, yeah, I was sort of thinking that there was a study done where they were looking at, so there was a 20-year study with nurses in America, and there were like 150,000 nurses. So it was a huge study, 20 years. And all it was doing was asking them, they had to fill it out like every 3 months or 6 months or something. And they basically wrote down approximate diet, what their health was doing, whether they'd had anything like strokes, heart attacks, cancers, yada, yada, yada. And at the end of the 20-year study, the overall thing was that diet and exercise don't stop you from having heart attacks, strokes, and cancer. So they just basically came up with some, you know, probably big pharma funded result, potentially. Anyway, so then the good thing about the study was that because it was so well put together, there were many, many, many gems within that study because it was so big so well documented. So what they did then was took all the women that had, say, breast cancer, and then they looked at the people who were, say overweight compared to those with normal weight, and what their prognosis was after the cancer, or those people who exercised or those who didn't exercise compared to those who exercised and didn't exercise after breast cancer. And same with the diet, whether they were vegan or vegetarian or meat eaters, and then afterwards. So basically what they found was, and here's the surprise that I'm sure no one will be surprised about, if you're someone who already exercises, does yoga, meditates and prays regularly, eats your plenty of greens and eats a healthy diet before cancer, and you continue doing the same afterwards, there's no improvement in prognosis, because you already have all of those things in your world. What you need to do is look for the other little gems you're not doing in your life. Are you in a stressful relationship, a stressful job, a subconscious belief system that says, yes, I'm going to have breast cancer by the time I'm 45 because my mum, my grandma, and my great-grandma did. So when they pulled it apart, it wasn't what we were doing before that was important. It's actually what we do afterwards, which is exactly like you say. Once we have that first sign of a stroke or a heart attack or cancer or diabetes, that's when we need to look and go, right, what am I doing? Because that isn't working, and try something different.
Yeah. And you know, I hate to say that. I come across a lot of women with young kids, boys or girls, and they're all on medication.
Oh, yes.
I get so, my heart starts to beep, and I get so stressed about the thought of there is a solution. That child is hyperactive for some reason.
Yes.
That child is not as, you know, if you really look at the back, I worked with a 15-year-old who was angry, lived in anger, always, mum changed him 3 schools, couldn't cope with his study. They were putting him on all these, you know, antidepressants. And he, luckily, he didn't like going through, because he said when he took the medication, he felt worse. He felt like a zombie.
Yes.
Anyway, grandma asked me if I would work with him. And I said, look, I'll do my best. I'll try. And he's, I don't know, because young ones, especially if his mother wasn't keen on working for, anyway, he came for about 7 or 8 sessions. It's all from the father. The father, when he was 3, used to hit him with a slipper, with his thumb, right? So what did this kid understand? He understood that the only way I'm going to be hurt is to hit people.
Yes.
My dad did it for me all my life. His father used to call him all sorts of names. So anyway, I did the claim with his dad, and that I found out now he's 18 now, because when I started working, he's 18 now. He's got himself a job. He stopped binge drinking on the weekends with his friends. He learned how to drive. He's bought himself a little car. And he stands up to his father.
Wow.
Says to his father, don't talk to me that way.
How fabulous.
Isn't that amazing? And he's not on medication. He got rid of medication.
Because quite often they're on uppers and downers.
Yeah.
They're on things like Ritalin and, you know, dexamphetamines in the morning, and then they're on beta blockers to help them sleep at nighttime.
I know.
You know, these poor little brains that are being, and they're being adjusted in real time.
Instead of checking out what am I feeding them? And I bet you anything, if you check their eating, you'll find a mum's so busy, she probably works. And I'm not blaming parents or in all way. I did. My son was a terrible eater because his father wouldn't eat any veggies. His father would eat nothing other than meat and rice.
Yes.
So my son ended up only wanting, and I was busy. I've been through it. I was busy trying to make a living, to put a roof over our heads, because the father wasn't supportive. And it was easy for me to go and get him McDonald's. And I'm sorry I did that, because he's suffering with that now. He's got that metabolic issues, but he's not I'm so grateful he's working on that himself now. But when we look at that, luckily he wasn't a hyperactive child. He was more a placid child. So I was very lucky in that sense. But we need to look at that.
Yes.
You know, okay, I am busy. And it's so much easier to eat healthier than not, than to go out. Someone says, oh, it's going to get takeaway. But, you know, it's quicker to cook a nice meal than to go out. And
yeah.
By the time you go for the takeaway, you could cook a meal.
Exactly. And someone shared something on Facebook over the weekend, and it was two packets of just say corn chips, I think it was. One of them had corn salt water. The other one had about 15 ingredients, fillers, emulsifiers, all sorts of things. So, you know, it's sort of, and they both, and this one that was claiming to be green and healthy and plant-based and yada, yada, had all these unnatural things in it. You've got to read the ingredients and do not believe labels. Right. I was saying to someone this morning that I remember I used to be part of a company many years ago, like 30 years ago, called Neolife. It was just a multi-level plant-based supplement company that at the time was amazing. And then it got taken over by a big pharma company, and slowly they started putting synthetic ingredients in. So, but what they did first, it's very, very clever. This isn't the product, obviously. I'm just using an example. So companies can patent a picture. If they patent a picture, that doesn't have to be truth. It can say nature in science. It can say, you know, plant-based. But if it's a picture, it does not have to be truth-based. So when I heard that, like 30 years ago, and same with things like no added sugar. Our government allows 5% sugar in things where sugar has been removed. So just because something says no added sugar, as soon as I see that, I think, well, there's going to be 5% sugar in, because legally that's what they can do. You know, so we really have to become ingredient watchers.
But then they say they take the sugar out, but then they put a sugar
supplement. Yes, all of those, yes. And they're just as bad for diabetes and our immune system and our metabolism. And they're actually neurotoxins, a lot of them. So there's actually a MS, multiple sclerosis type condition, that's basically aspartame poisoning. You know, and just recently I met a young lady, she's about 38, 39, and she was basically poisoned by medications for pain so that her arms and legs weren't working. And it wasn't anything to do with the COVID jabs, because obviously a lot of people are getting that sort of symptom, but it wasn't that, because she hasn't been. But nonetheless, I sort of took one look at her and, you know, she was literally not able to move for a week. And I said, anyway, so I sort of said, well, that's going to be the medications have just built up a, you know, toxic level in your body. Yeah. And then, but she drinks diet drinks all the time. She smokes like a trooper. And she is on so many pain drugs, it's phenomenal. And I'm just looking at her thinking, and, you know, what's going to happen? Is she going to be in a wheelchair by the time she's 40? Yeah. Like, it's just phenomenal.
If it's not from the medication, it's from the soft drinks.
Yeah, that's right.
All those other bad habits. Yeah, yeah. So true. I mean, I believe if I wanted a can of Coke, I would rather have a glass from the normal Coke than to have the one with the artificial.
Aspartame. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so people think, oh, it's diet, but it's what the other things are in there that's not the right thing for
you. Absolutely. And of course, you would know about the gut brain connection. So when you're working with people's minds, the more inflamed our gut is, the more inflamed our brain is.
Yep.
So do you work with diet on people, at least get them thinking about that sort of thing?
Well, with the 30-odd year-old lady I worked with who was anorexic, she was actually was bulimic. So she would eat and then throw up. And she said it was nothing for her to throw up 12, 15 times a day.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine her gut? Can you imagine her esophagus?
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, do you?
I always joke, I wished I could get anorexia for mom. I've been joking about that since I was 15. I love food too much and I can't make myself do it to save myself. Yeah,
my culture is food is it's a home.
Yeah.
Where you sit around and you chat and you laugh and we're getting more. Actually, Lebanese food is very good for you.
Yes.
It's not like the European because they eat everything from the land. They go to the backyard and get their lettuce. So they don't even have like vegetables and that in the shops. I'm talking in those days. I think it's terrible right now in Lebanon what's happening to it. They don't even have electricity or gas or anything like that. They have 1 hour a day electricity.
Is that with all this crazy stuff going on the planet at the moment?
Yeah. It's awful. It's awful. They're starving. So it's really sad. So very great.
Right, so it's like Sri Lanka. So did they do that same thing that Sri Lanka did? Oh, maybe you don't know. But, you know, Sri Lanka back in 2019, they signed an agreement with the World Economic Forum to reduce the use of nitrogen-based fertilizers. So, of course, but they gave the farmers no time to plan for organic farming. So, of course, now farmers are
I'm not sure. I think it's more political bad management and greed.
Oh, it's shocking.
Greedy. I don't follow politics a lot. But
when I was just curious, a lot of these green deals are really not good for us. You know, once again, I'm all for organic farming, but we've never had more than 3 to 7% organic food on the planet. So why would we magically be able to make it 100% just because some big greedy globalists want us to? Anyway, sorry, my 2 cents worth.
No, I agree with you. But no, with them, I think it's politics.
Yeah.
So the politicians starved the people. So, and then they had that big explosion a few years ago.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yep.
The hub of Beirut, and it actually destroyed a lot of families' income and things like that. But it's really sad. But going back to tradition, yes, we live on vegetables because it is generally a poor country. So they'd kill a sheep, and that would see them for the whole, you know, family, two or three families for one sheep. So they used to have their animals, and they will slaughter one animal at a time when they wanted food on the table.
Yes.
A lot of our food was legumes and things like that. So it is a healthier way of eating.
Yes.
I don't think we had fast foods there, but a lot of the food was more vegetables and that.
Yeah, so really nourishment to soul as well, obviously.
Nourishment, yeah. That's how I worked with this lady. I just tried to get her, because she saw food as poison, but she, when she made a choice to eat, she was choosing the wrong food.
Yeah.
So she'd go for a cake and her sweets, and then her subconscious mind goes, "You're going to put on weight," so she goes and throws up. So with her, it was really total. So I worked with her in the sense to look at the food, get yourself a, you know, fill yourself, your plate with vegetables or salad. You know that that's not going to be a lot of calories in that. So when you eat that, eat slow, eat smaller meals so you don't have the need to throw up.
Yes.
So I just sort of worked with her a little bit that way. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not, but I've learned what's good and what's bad for me, for us. So, and everyone's metabolism is different, but she's eating normal now, she reckons.
Yes.
She hardly throws up. And that's only since about November last year I started to.
Well done. Yeah. Because, you know, they sort of, you know, we're only about 10 years maybe into the whole microbiome, understanding the microbiome in the gut.
Yeah.
And there are so many varieties. And by most vegetables are prebiotics. So they're creating the environment where our good bacteria grow. And when we have you know, lots of sugar and the white things, you know, the white flours, the white rice, the white sugar, the white coats at doctors, you know, the, all the white stuff, you know, it's really bad for us and it destroys our microbiome. And the more insidious, nasty bacteria can grow in the gut, the things like E. coli and salmonellosis and staph and strep and that sort of thing. So we got to look after our gut.
Yes.
And massive gut-brain connection.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely huge.
The gut is, it's, I'm learning it myself the last few years. It really affects you everywhere. Like if your gut's not working, you know, your bowel's not working, your brain gets
full. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally. And so, then even within Chinese medicine, each emotion has a different, each organ connects to a different emotion, then they travel on from each other.
Yes.
So liver and gallbladder is anger. That sort of feeds the small intestine heart energy, which is an imbalance with love, joy, hate. That feeds the stomach small intestine, which is to do, stomach spleen, sorry, which is an imbalance with empathy and sympathy. When that's out of balance, it affects the lung and the large intestine, which is the imbalance with grief, guilt, regret, and that pushes fear and anxiety and that pushes anger and, you know, and round we go. So every organ has a connection with the emotions as well.
Yes.
And the more we start, exactly like you've said, you get to the underlying thing right back at the beginning. What can we do to start making big changes? You know, start working on loving yourself. Deal with the biggest issues first.
Yes.
Changing your diet, because that's easy. You have 100% control over exactly. What goes into your mouth.
Exactly. And look, until I practiced it, I couldn't understand it myself. But I know personally I sabotaged my health because it was easier for me to protect myself from my emotions. My emotional protection was to do that. But did it serve me well? No. And at that time, maybe emotionally it did. But now I know it doesn't. So yes, it's all together. And this, you know, the heart has to be in harmony with the brain. The brain has to be in harmony with the gut. It's even when we say the gut, people think it's just the stomach, but no, it goes right down to our.
Not much more than that.
Yeah, all the way down. And look, and the thing is, there is so much help. We do have help now. It's just making people aware that it's okay to ask for help.
Absolutely.
I think in the past we used to feel, I'm embarrassed. I don't want anybody to know that I'm emotionally going through some trauma or I'm physically or mentally abused. Or, you know, I was never physically abused by my husband, but I had mental abuse. I had mental, spiritual, and emotional abuse.
Yes.
And to me, sometimes it's no excuse, but it's probably worse than physical abuse, because when they hit you, you go, oh, I got hit. Okay, you deal with it. It's not over, but you deal with it. But mental, it just eats and eats and eats into you.
Yeah.
That it can really affect you in a lot of ways.
Sure can.
Yes.
So any last tips and hints for people before we round up?
Look, my hints and tips is just please be aware of your loved ones and people around you. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to ask them if they're okay. And don't wait till someone's crashed before you look and seek for help, because it's a lot easier to recognize and to heal when they're not crushed down to that extent. And love yourself. Love, if you don't know how to do it, just let me know, or connect with you even, because just learn to love yourself, love who you authentically are, and be open to change, because change is where we grow. We grow with change. And don't hide in your cocoon. My energy, whatever we call it. I'm not very strong with a lot of words, as you can see. But, you know, caterpillar goes into a cocoon and it hibernates. And it cannot come out of that cocoon until it works from the inside out. And that's our lives. If we keep ourselves in that cocoon and hide in that cocoon, if anybody comes to break through, it will kill us. We have to be the ones that want to get out of that. And until you're ready to do that, a lot of people can't help you. So be aware of it. Look at your loved ones and even little ones. Just watch your words. Words are like spells. We say to kids, you're stupid, or nothing good is going to come out of you. Oh, you're so clumsy. So they go through their lives believing that. So, use nice words, use appropriate words at the right time. Instead of saying, don't run, just say walking.
Yes.
The person will understand walking. We say don't run, they think they gotta run because they've heard the word run before the don't.
And we're putting fear into them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because with our tone and that energy, of always being fearful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. How can people find you, Faizy? So you've got your website there.
I have my website, and my website's very small because I, like I said, I'm not technically minded. On my website, it does have my my contact details. So just contact me on that and I will make an appointment. We can have a discovery chat and see if my work resonates well with them and they're happy to work with me, then we'll go take it that step further. Absolutely. But I love anyone to connect with me just for a chat, see how things can work for them.
Yes. Well, that's been absolutely wonderful.
Thank you. And I'm also in LinkedIn, and I'm also in, I'm not technically minded, so all my information may not make sense in there. I don't know. So, anyway.
Well, tonight you'll also be on YouTube, Rumble, and BitChute.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity. I've loved it. I was a little bit anxious at one time. I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? But it's I work from my heart and my gut.
And mostly you love what you're doing and you get results, and that really resonates. You can really feel how much you love helping people.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And you too. You look lovely, by the way. I think I told you that first.
Thank you.
I love those colours. You got my colours.
Well, have a spectacular day. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Faizy, I appreciate you. Talk again soon.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Very much. Bye.